Good morning, everyone. We'll make a start. For those who don't know me, my name is Brett Riley. I'm chair for this session. The topic for this concurrent session is, as you can see on the screen, insights into comprehensive motor rating. I'll introduce our speakers in a moment. This is the last session before lunch, so we'll try and keep it tight. I know the guys have got quite a few slides to get through, so it might be a bit tight. Maybe some people want to stay afterwards when we spill into lunch. They can take some further questions, but we'll try and finish on time by 12:15. The topic of the presentation, Nelson and Bowe have conducted a survey of over 40,000 motor quotes in 2008. So exploring approaches to motor rating, key factors, and they're comparing to a similar survey that was done in the early 1990s and seeing what's changed. Finally, they'll discuss the role of the competitor premium data, but I won't steal too much of their thunder. So I'll introduce the speakers. Firstly, we have Nelson Henwood. Nelson is a principal with Finity. He rejoined the firm in January 2007, having previously worked for Trowbridge Consulting from 1996 to 2002. Nelson qualified as a fellow in 1999 and has 11 years' experience in general insurance. He's based in Sydney, consults to a wide range of clients in GI, in Australia and New Zealand, on a variety of matters. He specialises in pricing advice, primarily in the personal and small commercial line segments, and he leads Finity Consulting's pricing practice. Bo Wang joined Finity as a consultant in 2008 and has worked in the general insurance industry for 5 years. Prior to that, Bo worked at QBE Insurance Australia for a number of years after he qualified as a fellow, mainly working on long-tail portfolios. Bo now focuses on pricing, personal lines and CTP. He's interested in statistical modelling and currently undertaking some postgraduate research in that area. So I understand Nelson will do the presentation, but Bo's available to take questions at the end. I'll hand it over to you, Nelson.
Thanks, Brett. So as Brett said, this the paper that we put together is based on a survey of competitor premiums that we did in 2008. It was an internet-based survey. We covered 5 states across Australia. In each state, we got the top 3 or 4 underwriters. We covered the major nationals and we covered one smaller national. So the market share by the insurers that we got quotes from was ranging between 60 to 90% in each state, depending on the state. As Brett said, we got about 40,000 quotes to do the survey. So there's a fair bit of data that we base the analysis on. Some limitations of the survey were that we only looked at online premiums, and there are some differences between phone premiums and online premiums. I don't think that really disrupts any of the findings, though. And the premiums relate to new business only. So the key findings from our paper were firstly that there has been significant development in the rating of comprehensive motor. Frequently through the paper we make comparisons to the findings from a paper from Brigstock and Yee in 1992, and there have been significant changes over the period. Diversity of rating parameters across competitors. There's large differences in the approach and the rating parameters adopted by competitors in each state. And that's interesting given that it's a highly competitive commodity-based market. Structures are complex. And this is driven by greater sophistication in claims cost modelling, by adoption of more formal approaches to incorporate things like price sensitivity and competitor premiums into go-to-market prices, and development in the sophistication of rating engines that deliver the prices. So the implications of all of this are that it's pretty complex to monitor the competitive environment these days, and challenging to incorporate competitor premium data into your pricing directly. Nevertheless, we think that it's critical to do these things to effectively manage a personal lines portfolio. So just an outline of what we'll go through in the presentation. We'll take you through our findings in relation to driver rating, vehicle rating and location rating, which are the primary rating factors for comprehensive motor. We'll look at interactions in the structure, which is how these rating variables come together and we'll look at the implications of all of this for measuring competitive position. So where we go with drivers. So the driver section, we go through a couple of different aspects of driver rating. So selection of the rated driver, the age and gender relativities, additional driver loadings, and experience rating. So rated driver, where there are a number of drivers of a vehicle, there's a range of approaches to determining the rated driver. Typically the way the rating works is that we'll determine a rated driver, apply the rating process for that driver, and then apply loadings for the additional drivers that might drive a vehicle. So there's a number of different approaches where there are multiple drivers to selecting the rated driver. So in some cases there is the proportion of use. So that would be, for example, the most frequent driver might be the rated driver. In some cases, the youngest driver with an economic interest in the vehicle or the youngest owner or driver of the vehicle selected as the rated driver. In some cases, the youngest regular driver, which is defined differently across insurers, might be selected as the rated driver. So regular might be defined as meeting some kind of threshold of use, which might be once a month or 15% or something like that. And in some cases, we've seen some insurers select the youngest owner or driver as the rated driver. So this is a picture of the driver age premium relativities in New South Wales across the insurers that we surveyed. So the curves show the premiums relative to the premium for a driver age 40 years old, which we selected as a base. Now this is the curve for male drivers. So the most favourably rated driver is reasonably common amongst insurers and tends to be at some point around the early 60s. And there are loadings for drivers younger than that and older than that. The loadings for younger drivers are substantial in some cases. There's three insurers there, as you can see, which are clearly higher than the other two. And the loadings are quite high for very young drivers for those insurers. Interestingly now, the loadings are also quite high for elderly drivers as well. The insurers with high loadings for young drivers are tending to be those with high loadings for older drivers as well, which may indicate that they're preferring to play in a certain segment of the market. Now, we look to see whether these differentials in the age loadings for younger drivers were explainable by things like the excess structure that the insurer applied, or perhaps with respect to the method of selection of the rated driver, but there wasn't any clear relationship there. Insurer 7, as you can see there, there's a bit of a sawtooth pattern to the rating, which is interesting. There's a spike in the age loading at certain ages, which is higher than the loading that applies on either side. Now, it'd be difficult to imagine that that's purely driven by risk differentials, and that may involve some kind of price testing that the insurer is doing to understand the sales response with a higher level of premium. So this picture shows the male premium relativities versus the female premium relativities. One of the insurers in our survey in New South Wales doesn't differentiate by the gender of driver, and that's Insurer 7, which is the purple flat line there. Typically, male premiums are higher, and it's usually the case that they're higher for younger drivers. Insurer 20 has the highest loadings for younger drivers, and the differential tends to get smaller at around the sort of the early 40s, and there are ranges there where the female premiums are actually higher than the male premiums, and that's where that blue line dips below the x-axis there. For Insurer 17, which is the gold one there, the male premiums are higher and for younger drivers, and that tends to decrease, and from about the age of 50, they're pretty much the same from that point on. For Insurer 12, there's a pretty constant differential. That's the green line for males and females up until about the mid-60s, and then the male premiums are about sort of 1% higher from that point on. The pink one, which is Insurer 6, the male premiums are higher only up to about age 30, and then the premiums are similar, except for at certain points there's some spikes in that relationship as well. It's a bit difficult to understand. This is a picture of driver age relativities as applied in 1992, which we pulled from the Brigstock and Yee paper. So some features of 1992 versus 2008. In 1992, there was no differentiation by gender of driver, and we can see that that's pretty commonplace these days. Now, the age curve was actually flat from 30 until, in inverted commas, older ages, which wasn't defined in the paper. However, some companies, the quote from the paper was that some companies offer lower premiums for this subgroup being older drivers, with a discount of 5 to 10% being typical. We can see now that these older drivers actually attract a loading in most of the rating structures. The relativities today are much more granular than they were in 1992. There's quite a lot of banding of ages, as you can see there, in the structures that were in place then. And back then, only 50% of insurers had higher rates for 26 to 30-year-old drivers, whereas now that's fairly commonplace. In fact, rates tend to drop up to about age 35 and then are flat to about age 50 or so in structures today. We found a lot of variation when we then looked at the approach to additional drivers and how additional drivers were reflected in the premiums across the insurers. So the way we looked at that was we surveyed a scenario where there was a 40-year-old male rated driver, and we compared premiums applying for the 40-year-old male driver with an additional young driver at various ages versus the premium that applied for that young driver on its own. So what we'd expect to see there is a discount being applied relative to the young driver on its own, because in that particular case, the younger driver represents a proportion of the risk, but not the entire risk. What we actually saw in practice was a lot of variation between the insurers. So we've just put up the relativities for two of the insurers from our survey there. Insurer 14 on the left, which in that scenario offered a discount of about 40% off the 18-year-old driver premium if it was a 40-year-old rated driver with an 18-year-old driver. And then insurer 11 actually loads the premium by 120% for a 40-year-old driver with an 18-year-old driver versus an 18-year-old driver on its own. It's difficult to fathom. Experience rating, which for comprehensive motor is typically through a no-claims discount structure. Historically, no-claims discount structures have been pretty similar across insurers. We've seen minor variations sort of here and there, and they've been used as marketing tools by insurers. But on balance, the systems were pretty uniform and they've been pretty transparent to the consumers as well. Previously, insurers would honour the NCD offered on renewal for a customer transferring insurers at renewal. Now, a number of insurers don't ask for a current NCD when quoting on a risk, but what they will do is in fact assess an NCD to apply based on the driving experience and accident history. So there's a couple of implications of that. Firstly, you don't need an insurance history to earn an NCD these days. And secondly, the insurer, through doing that, can superimpose their own rules over the driving history to give the NCD that they will offer. Now, Insurer 6 and Insurer 12 operate that way in New South Wales. We've also seen other adjustments to premiums which for the driving history which operate outside of the NCD structure. So one insurance group, in fact, imposes a series of loadings that depends on the insurance history, and these operate outside of and in addition to the NCD structure. So in effect, what you've got happening is the base premium moves depending on the insurance history, and then there's an NCD applied to that. Pretty complex stuff, especially for a consumer to understand what's going on. Another insurer which does honour the NCD entitlement of other insurers, they apply 25% loading to the base premium for any claims in the last 5 years, regardless of fault. So again, you've got the base premium moving before application of the NCD. So on balance now, I'd say that there's greater complexity in the experience rating and less transparency for consumers. So let's look at vehicle rating. Our survey consisted of around 300 different vehicles for each state brand combination. And when we look at vehicle rating here, we look at the combined impact of vehicle value, vehicle age, and the vehicle make model impact. So the 300 vehicles that we surveyed covered a range of make and models, families, years of manufacture, and values. And what we've got here is the distribution of the vehicle relativities for that 300 to the median relativity, or the median premium, for each of the insurers. So there's some similarity in the shape across the insurers. Insurers 6 and 12, which are the pink and green series there, they show longer tails than the others, so that would indicate more segmentation in the vehicle rating. Insurers 17 and 20 show less variation. There's a higher peak in the distribution, which is the gold and blue series for those guys, and less relativities in the tail. So for insurer 7, there's also less variation, and they've got a greater bulk of the relativities between 0.65 and 1.2. So whilst there's some similarity in the overall distribution of the vehicle relativities, there can be quite a lot of difference in the assessment of individual vehicles, or the relativities for individual vehicles across the insurers. So we've highlighted a couple of examples there. One of them is the light blue line, which is the SLK 200 and Mercedes. So that's rated as having a very high relativity for insurer 6, about 160% above the median. For other insurers, it's typically sort of 40% plus above the median, but for insurer 17, which is the orange series there, that Mercedes SLK is rated right at the median in terms of the vehicles. The Honda Insight is another one that we highlighted there, and that's the green line. Now, that's rated sort of pretty close to the median for insurer 6, insurer 7, and insurer 20 on the far side. But insurer 12 and 17 take a different view, and the premium relativity is much higher for that vehicle. And even the Hyundai Getz, which is the purple line at the bottom, it's rated at the low end of the risk spectrum for all the insurers. But the differences there come about to be a difference of about 50% in premium from the highest to the lowest, or a difference in 50% in premium relativity from the highest to the lowest. So there's a lot of variation. We looked at a bit more detail in the paper at the compact SUV family, which is a family that we find encompasses vehicles that tend to have a pretty similar claims profile. So the figure shows the spread of vehicle relativities relative to the median for CSUVs across insurers. And there are some similarities in the spread, but there's also some big differences. So Insurer 5, for example, which is the red series there, they've got a set of relativities that are quite compressed around plus or minus 5% around the median. And obviously the one that stands out there is Insurer 10. Which has a much greater range of relativities for those vehicles. And again, there are inconsistencies in the assessment of individual vehicles. I'm not sure how well you can see that there, but one of the ones we've highlighted is the 2003 Honda CR-V, and it's rated pretty high. In fact, amongst the highest for Insurer 4, and it's amongst the lowest in terms of risk relativities for Insurer 10. I've got to stop calling these risk relativities, premium relativities. Another thing we did was to look at how the vehicle relativities varied for that CSUV family across different characteristics of the vehicle. So we looked at a number of different characteristics in the paper. This slide shows the premium relativities by engine size across the insurers. So the colour of the pixels there indicates a different engine size. So the red pixels are 2 litre up to the purple pixels there are 3 litre. Now, what we can see there is that the relationship is quite different across the insurers when looking across engine size, even in this family. So insurer 5, for example, there's a negative correlation between the risk relativities and engine size, and insurer 26, on the other side there, there's a positive correlation. So differences in the way that the vehicle risk relativities are assessed would be the conclusion there. We built a simple decision tree model to try and explain the risk relativities, the vehicle relativities across the insurers, and we included a number of characteristics as potential explanatory factors, and they're listed down the left there. So things like number of cylinders, value, power to weight ratio. And let me describe how this figure works, which illustrates the results of our model. The bubble, the size of the bubble indicates the strength of the relationship between the vehicle relativity and the characteristic. And the strength of the relationship here is measured by what's called the relative importance, and that's the contribution of the variable to the R squared of the model. So what we can see there is that the vehicle value is the most important explanatory variable, and across all the insurers, this is the New South Wales insurers in this figure, across all the insurers, it was the most important characteristics across about half of them. And more interestingly, next in line was the power to weight ratio. That was, on average, the second most important factor, and in fact was the most important factor for a couple of the insurers. And other factors that tend to drive the vehicle risk relative or the vehicle relativities are factors such as the country of manufacture, the number of cylinders, and the vehicle family. And what we found was that these simple models typically explained around 65% of the variation that we saw in vehicle relativities across the insurers. And that was pretty constant across the insurers. Location rating. We surveyed suburbs very extensively in the metropolitan area in each state. And we additionally sampled premiums applying to suburbs in major regional centres and surrounds. Now, the figure shows the distribution of suburb relativities for New South Wales insurers, and the relativity to the median premium, again, is shown here. Now, a typical span of the distribution is from about 0.5 to about 1.5 or 1.6, so that's a differential of about a factor of 3 from top to bottom in terms of suburb risk. So in the survey, insurer 6 in New South Wales showed the greatest spread. And insurer 7 there, the distribution's distinctly bimodal, and that was really a metro, non-metro type effect, and the relativities were pretty compressed in metro, non-metro areas. So we did some maps of the location relativities as well, and this is a map for the Sydney metro area. And the way the colour coding works in the maps is that it works from dark green, being the lowest relativity for a suburb, up to dark red, indicating the highest relativity. And this is the map for Insurer 6. Now, there's a couple of interesting features in the map. There's a real north-south divide from the sort of the mouth of the harbour out to west of Horsley Park. The north of the harbours attracts much lower relativities than south of the harbour. There's some hotspots evident around areas like Parramatta, Bankstown and Cabramatta. And interestingly, the eastern suburbs attract relatively high loadings in the structure of Insurer 6. So compare that to the map for Insurer 12. And there's some similarities in that map. Again, the north-south divide's pretty evident in the suburb risk relativities. The hotspots are in similar areas as well. We need to move a bit further north to get the very low relativities for Insurer 12, and the eastern suburbs aren't attracting as high relativities. So we put in the presentation for contrast the map for Insurer 7, and as you can see there, there's much less granularity in the suburb rating for Insurer 7, and we saw that from the histogram. There's a greater collection of larger areas with very similar rates for Insurer 7. Now, we found in the survey that every insurer rates below postcode level, most insurers rate at suburb level, and two insurers vary premiums within suburbs. So Insurer 20 was one of the insurers that varied premiums within suburbs, and we took a closer look at that. We sampled premiums for 100 addresses in Granville for that insurer. And again, on this map here, we've plotted the surveyed addresses as dots. The green indicates a low relativity, and the dark red indicates a high relativity. Now, the span from top to bottom, interestingly, is about 25%, from the dark red to the dark green within the suburb of Granville. And there's some cases up here where adjoining properties have got quite different relativities. So, again, it's quite difficult to fathom that that would be driven entirely by risk differentials. Insurer 7 is the other insurer rating below suburb level. In fact, they rate at street level, but the variation in premium is a lot lower. It's around 1%. Or it was 1% in Granville. We found it a bit higher in other suburbs for Insurer 7. Interactions in the structure. So we looked at, in quite a bit of detail, the way that the age, location and vehicle risk factors come together to drive relativities, and we call those interactions. And the way that we illustrate the interactions, I don't know how well that's coming up on the screen there, the way we illustrate them is to plot the age curve in a number of different suburbs for a number of different vehicles. So each series in this graph represents an age curve for a particular vehicle in a particular suburb, and we've taken the relativity to a 40-year-old driver. So to the extent that we're not seeing all the dots sitting over the top of each other for ages within suburb, there's interactions in the structure. So this is the picture for Insurer 17, and what we can see there is that the age curve is consistent across the suburbs for Insurer 17, and in fact the age loadings are the same for vehicles across the ages, except for at age 18, where there's some variation there. And at age 18 for Insurer 17, the highest relativity was for the sports vehicles that we sampled, and they were the Ford Probe and the Honda Integra. With Insurer 6, the picture looks a bit different. So with Insurer 6, the age curve varies across the suburbs. In fact, it's different in each of the suburbs that we surveyed. Now, the age loadings are mostly uniform for the different vehicles. However, there's a couple of notable exceptions. You can see that the pink line sort of sits sort of way above the age relativities for an 18-year-old driver for the other vehicles, and that's for the BMW 7. The loading for that vehicle is also marginally higher at age 25 as well. Excuse me. There's also some variations to the age loadings for the Ford Transit, but they're pretty small and non-uniform across the suburbs. This is the picture for Insurer 12, and Insurer 12 also varies the age loadings across suburbs. And in addition, there's a large amount of variation of the age curve for individual vehicles. And we looked at the differentials at 65 and 80, and they were pretty similar. So we rebased the age curves to age 60, and we got this picture. And that kind of shows that there's an increasing spread of age-vehicle interactions as a driver age gets younger. So the spread tends to sort of fan out. And in fact, for this insurer, the interactions are so great that it's possible to have a situation where the loading for an 18-year-old for a particular vehicle is less than the loading for a 25-year-old for a different vehicle. And just to give you a sense of some of the variations, the highest age loadings for an 18-year-old driver were for a Hyundai Santa Fe, Mitsubishi Outlander and a Holden Rodeo. So two of those are SUV-type vehicles. The Rodeo also attracted a relatively high age loading for age 25. The lowest age loadings for an 18-year-old driver were for the Hyundai Sonata and the Mitsubishi Lancer. And one thing I didn't point out, which we noticed, was that the age-vehicle interactions are the same across the suburbs. So the order of the vehicles in terms of the age loading that gets applied is the same across the suburbs, but it's not the same across the ages. And the winner for the most interactions is Insurer 7. Now, the loadings for the 25-year-old and 18-year-old don't cross over for Insurer 7, but that's because Insurer 7 had a much steeper age curve than Insurer 12. Now, Insurer 7 seems to have a similar basic shape of the age curve across the suburbs, but there are large variations in the age loading for individual vehicles. And they're non-uniform, and they're really hard to understand as well. Now, let me give you an example. The highest loading for an 18-year-old driver for Belmore, you can't really see these too well, but they're for the Ford Transit up here and the Mitsubishi Express. So the Express is the yellow triangle and the Transit is the green dot. Now, if we look at Dennerstone West, we find that the Express, again, attracts a high age loading for an 18-year-old driver, but the Transit is right down the bottom. I'll just point out another one, which was interesting. An 18-year-old driving a Holden Rodeo in Eureka. It's got the highest age loading for an 18-year-old driver. And then in Belmore, it's down here, skewered by the brown triangle. So they're kind of all over the place and difficult to understand. All right, I better get on with it. I've only got a few slides. So we've seen a great deal of diversity in the rating parameters across competitors, and what this implies is that the competitive position, obviously, takes the form of a distribution. Now, how do we estimate this distribution? Well, there's a couple of ways we could do that. We could follow an approach which we call deconstruct and merge. So that would be attempting to solve the rating parameters underlying a competitor's rating structure and use that to predict the competitor premium onto a file representing the population over which we wish to measure competitive position. Now, there's some problems with that kind of approach, obviously, given the complexity of the rating structures. We'd need a fairly large volume of quotes, and even then we'd only be able to approximate what the insurers are doing. We could follow a sampling type of approach. We've got to be careful what we sample over, though. If we sample over the in-force for an insurer, for example, we're going to tend to get a biased view, because that's business that the insurer has actually won. Another possible approach, depending on the business problem we're trying to solve, might be to use a synthetic data set or a formulated representation of the population and get quotes for the competitor over that. For all these approaches, there are real challenges around product comparability from one insurer to the next and rating parameter alignment, i.e. the insurers don't all rate on the same stuff and don't have the same levels for all of the variables. Now, in practice, we find that you can get a reasonable sense of the distribution, especially around the middle percentiles, from a couple of hundred quotes. So we thought it might be interesting to show what these distributions look like across some of the insurers that we surveyed. So this is the distribution in premiums for Insurer 6 versus Insurer 12. Now, there's a differential, so the mean of this distribution is minus 5%. So that means Insurer 6, on average, is 5% cheaper than Insurer 12. But as you can see, it's a very wide distribution. Insurer 6 is more than 30% cheaper about 12% of the time and more than 30% more expensive about 10% of the time. And here's some pictures across other combinations of two insurers that we included in our survey. So I'll just briefly talk about using competitor data in pricing analysis and why it might make sense. A small insurer obviously has a significant competitive disadvantage in the market in that it doesn't have the volumes of data to comb to be able to understand risk relationships. But this can be ameliorated by understanding how other insurers price different segments of the market. Now, their prices won't exactly align to the cost, but it should bear a reasonable relationship. And that will give the sort of breakdown some of that competitive disadvantage for the smaller insurer. Another reason to do it is that you might uncover simple opportunities to increase rates where you're leaving money on the table when you contrast your rates to those of a competitor. For an insurer with a good understanding of their costs, this insurer will want to ensure that it's priced attractively in the profitable segments of its book and priced to avoid writing business in loss-making segments. Using competitor data also gives us a chance to build much better models of quote conversion and renewal retention, because we're able to separate out the price versus the general inertia type effects in the model. And because competitor data is important input into the sales performance models, it's therefore important as an input into price optimisation as well. So that's my last slide, which are just the key takeouts. And really that's just to say that comprehensive motor insurance rating is evolving. Things have changed quite a lot and they'll continue to change. It's important to stay on top of what's happening in the market. There's diversity in the rating parameters adopted by competitors, even in this highly competitive market. The structures are complex, things like vehicle rating, rating below suburb levels, the extent of interactions that we find in the structures tend to make the rating structures very complex on average. So I guess one of the key messages is that it's challenging to measure competitive positioning, but it's really difficult to manage a portfolio effectively without this understanding. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Nelson. We've got a few minutes for questions. Could I just ask that everyone use the microphone that's in the middle of the room? Just before we kick off, I'll just mention also that the guys did write a paper. It's on the website, so please go in and download a copy of that and have a look. So we've got any questions? I can't let this guy next to me off the hook, so maybe send some questions his way. Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff Thorpe from Westpac. We don't actually have a motor book, but we've got Home and Contents, which has got similar issues. We are one of the smaller insurers, so given that you've got all those relativities, which are different for different reinsurers, is it actually reasonable to say that that's a reasonable split of your... a reasonable representation of your costs? So, for instance, where you had one motor vehicle for one insurer, it was high, and then it was low for another one. How do you take that out as far as that side of things?
Well, I guess it could be a number of different things. And one of the things I tried to avoid doing in the presentation was to call the relativities risk relativities, because they won't only be risk-based or based on cost. Typically these days what we're seeing is that more insurers are more explicitly factoring things like what other insurers are charging, for example, or the sales response, the demand response to the price, in factoring the premiums for individual risks. So we've got to be a bit careful in thinking that they're just purely risk-based. Is that kind of what you meant?
Yeah, but you did actually mention that it's useful for a small insurer.
Yep. Yep. So there will be some relationship, though. I mean, I'd hate to think that these overlays will completely distort the picture. In fact, it would probably be dangerous if they did. So I think that there would be some relationship, but I wouldn't take them to be exactly sort of having a one-to-one relationship with the cost.
Notice in your area variable, for example, like where I lived, and in one of them it was low, the premium was low, and the next one was the highest.
Chop around. Shop around. Yeah, well, I guess there's different people doing the analysis in different areas. Different insurers have got different data. The costs are impacted by the way that they underwrite, all kinds of things.
I suppose I'm getting at it that you can have a look at it, but in the end, you've actually got to make up, even as a small insurer, you've got to make up your own mind about those.
Sure, you do. Yeah.
Any other questions? Comments? David? Thank you.
Can I just sneak in, because I think Jeff's question goes to a very good point, which is domestic motor rating structures are so complex, And there are so many judgment calls to make that inevitably, like it was fascinating just looking at those pictures, how can people be so different on what you would think are straightforward issues, but you're looking at so many different cells with such a small amount of claims data in each cell, and that's before you even get to the overlay of, you know, price elasticity and so on. And one of the keys to unlocking that, I think, is also portfolio management. You know, you can have a book that's running well, and part of the response to that can be, let's not muck around with it too much. So I'd be interested in your views on that.
I guess there's a couple of elements to that. You raised the point about not wanting to sort of upset the apple cart, and I guess what that could mean is that at any one point in time, the relativities that you see in a premium structure might not only be a function of the insurer's best view of the costs at that point in time, but might be a product of history as well, in terms of sort of moving towards something. You're seeing a rating structure at a point in time rather than sort of ultimately what it might get to. And interestingly, even the assessment of costs, you know, the techniques are getting more and more powerful in terms of finding signals in the data. And your best view of the cost relativity for a particular risk today might differ quite substantially from your view on that same risk in 10 years' time, even with the same data, because you're looking at the data in a different way.
Probably got time for one more question before we catch the bell. Anyone? Question? Comment?
Steve Underwood. Just when you were looking at, say, the larger players in the market, did you notice more consistency amongst the outcomes there? And when you refer to these issues that you know, hard to fathom or difficult to understand what the insurer was doing, does that relate more to those sort of smaller fringe players?
No, I don't think that's the case. I think we actually found the most of differences from those larger players in the market. In terms of kind of the things they could be doing to the data is more complicated, and so well as a lot of the insurers use price optimization techniques where the premium relativities can bear no resemblance to your risk relativities. And we have seen that in one of the interaction diagrams for, I think, Insurer 7, where you see that different vehicles, different ages, different suburbs just lie all over the place on the graph.
And I think what we did see was evidence of price testing going on there, where insurers are testing the market to see what the sales response might be. And some examples of that were those spikes in the age curve for Insurer 7. You know, and there, for example, the premium for a 49-year-old might be 10% higher than that for a 48-year-old and a 50-year-old. Now, they're going to be priced pretty similarly for the competitors. So by understanding the difference in the sales response, you can get a sense of what kind of response you're going to get from a 10% premium differential. With one of the insurers that rated below suburb, and we saw some adjoining properties that had quite different relativities. Now, it's hard to believe that they'd be fully risk-related as well, especially for something like motor, where for the most part you're dealing with a moving conveyance that you're insuring. Now, in that particular case, what I believe might be going on is, again, some price testing. And the insurer may in fact be almost randomly varying the premium by certain amounts to get an understanding of what the price response would be to those different levels of premium.
We are out of time, I'll take a quick one from Jeff. Keep it short, please.
Jeff Atkins. Nelson, can a modern quoting website detect a web bot and feedback spam?
I guess they possibly could. One of the things we're seeing now is that session times are being limited. It could be being spam fed back, but it's difficult to do that, isn't it? Or it can be problematic because you've got the type 1, type 2 error situation creeping in and you don't really know if it's a word bot or not.
Interesting. Okay, I'll wrap it up there. Thank you everyone for attending. We've got a couple of gifts for the guys. Would you join me in thanking